We now begin the fifth parak of Maseches Bava Metzia. This chapter is known as Ezehu Neshech, and the topic is the prohibition of profiting from a lending to a fellow Jew. Okay? Now, the notion of charging interest, which is called ribis or neshech, and the iser, it seems to be an especially big deal to Hashem, in as much as there are numerous psukim dedicated to this, and there's numerous lavin prohibitions that are encapsulated in doing such a thing. So you see, it's a big deal. So to Hashem, and therefore, I think we got to just think about it for a second, taking a step back, because it's not so easy to understand what the big deal is. So let's just step one. The Torah is teaching essentially an ethic, which is saying, listen, it's not right to lend it interest, but we have to ask, you know, why? You know, if you want to borrow my car, and I say, I'll lend you my car, but since I have to go without a car, when you give it back to me in a week, I want not just my car back, I also want $100 as a rental fee in exchange for me going without a car. That seems perfectly fair. But if the Torah is saying, if your friend, your fellow Jew, needs money, and you say, listen, I'll lend you $1,000, but I expect you to give me a rental fee for my money since I'm going without it, give me an extra $100 as a rental fee, that's the interest, afterwards, the Torah is saying, no, that's an issur d'oraisa. So what is the difference and why? So I think the basic idea is that the Torah is trying to teach an ethic, which is you're meant to relate to your fellow Jew, amisecha, your fellow Jew who behaves like a good Jew, as a relative, as like your brother, your cousin. And the Torah is saying it's just not right for you to lend to your brother at interest. You know, lending him your car is one thing, but if he needs money, and you're charging for that, so you're making things even worse for them than before in terms of his need. So that's unacceptable in the Torah's eyes. Now, the Gemara, the Rambam, the Halacha goes on to say that actually it's required that you charge interest if you're lending to a non-Jew. So you see, there's nothing like sort of immoral about lending and charging interest. It's that the Torah is telling you a value that you're supposed to relate to your fellow Jew as your family member, and family members don't do that to one another when they're desperate for money to demand interest and a payback. That's the Torah's sort of ethic, what it's teaching here. Now, to understand the whole principle a little more, I want to make sure that something's clear. In English, we talk about a loan, but the word loan could mean a couple things. And in the Torah, we have two separate words. One is called a she'ela, and one is called a halva'a. A she'ela is when I lend you something, but I expect you to give me that very same thing back to me. So you say, listen, I need a hammer. I'm building, a shed outside. Can I borrow your hammer? So I say, yeah, I'll give you my hammer. And that's called a she'ela because you're going to use the hammer and give me back that very same hammer. If you would, go then sell that hammer and on eBay and then, replace a different one, it'd be sort of a pull. That wasn't the idea. Or if you use it as firewood or who knows what you're going to use it for. That's not the deal. The deal is I'm letting you give it. I'm letting you use it, but I want it back. That's called a she'ela. A halva'a, a loan, also in English, same thing, is given in a way that I understand. You're going to consume what I'm giving you. You're going to spend it or eat it, and it'll be gone. But then you'll replace it with the replacement one. So you ask, can I borrow your orange juice? Can I borrow $100? And I give you the orange juice, $100. I understand you're going to drink the orange juice. You're not giving me back the very same orange juice. Or you're not giving me this very same $100. You're going to spend the money. And then when you get your paycheck next week, you'll give me a new $100 in replacement. That's called a halva'a. Okay? In English, both could be called loans, lending someone, but they're really different. Now, the Torah lets a person do both those things. A person is allowed to, instead of giving a she'ela, a loan, lending an object for free, he's allowed to do to rent it out. Okay, demaskir it. You could rent out things like that. So I could rent my hammer to you or my car to you, and expect to get paid for that. And that's within bounds of the Torah. But if it's a halva, a loan, then I'm giving you what you're going to consume, like food or money. Then it becomes forbidden for me to demand that you give me back more than I gave you. And that's the purview of this Mishnah, of this whole parak, really. Now, the Torah refers to that both as ribis or marbis or tarbis, and also as neshech. And really those terms effectively are interchangeable, meaning you just have two separate lavin here. But they really do the same thing. In your basic textbook case of ribis or neshech, which is a doraisa, is I'm lending you something, let's say money, or apples, and I say, here's 100, but when you pay me back, give me 110. So that is called ribis katsutsa, that's the technical term, means that we set up at the time of the loan that what you're going to give me back is more than I'm giving you. There's a predetermined extra payment, okay? That's the Issur D'oraisa. That would constitute both ribis and neshech. It's over both. The truth is the Mishnah ends up saying that you can be over six lavin for doing such a transaction, but, well, depending on structure, and both the borrower and the lender are liable, as well as even the guy who's like the lawyer or guy running the contract. All these people are doing an Issuri D'oraisa. The details we'll see later on. But the point is that it's called neshech, from the word like noshech, to bite, because it sort of like bites the borrower, right? He thinks he's just borrowing a little money. Okay, big deal. It's a little bit of interest payment. But you know what? That little bit then, you know, grows and grows, and he gets deeper and deeper in debt. Sort of takes things over, like a little snake bites you on the foot. You say, oh, it's just a small little bite. But no, the venom will take over your whole body and, you know, bring you into total decline, like bankruptcy. The marbis, with ribis from the word like harbet, to increase, is focused not on the borrower, that's neshech, but on the lender who's profiting, who's making more. In other words, I had 100 apples, I'm getting back 110, so I'm being marbem, increasing my apples. Okay, but both neshech and marbis in the psukim are really effectively interchangeable, meaning they're both Issuri D'oraisa and both talking about this prohibition of what we'll call ribis ketzutza, lending, expecting to get back more than what you gave. In the Pesukim themselves, if you look carefully, you'll see that when the Pesukim talk about it, it focuses on cash, money as neshech, and stuff, produce, as marbis. Like, for example, the Pesuk says, Es kaspecha lo siten lo b'neshech, your money you shall give to your fellow Jew b'neshech, for interest, like dollar interest, uva marbis lo siten achlecha, and also for marbis, like ribis, you should not give your food. So in the Pesukim, it seems to go consistently that neshech is a word that applies to money, whereas marbis, tarbis, ribis applies to food. But bottom line is they're interchangeable. One applies to the other. And so you're over, like, I'll call it two lavin, at least, when you do a loan, whether it's apples or money, when you're asking for more than you gave. Okay. Now, that's the D'oraisa. The rabbis went and extend this a little bit. You see, it's a very big deal to Hashem, and therefore the rabbis have made quite a wide fence to protect around ribis. The first is what is called avak ribis. Avak ribis means, like, you know, the dust of interest. So that's where I lend to you money or stuff, food, let's say, and I don't stipulate something specific yet to pay me back. So I give you the $100, and there's no demand for more than $100 back. But you are very happy you got the money, and when you give me back, you give me something else in addition. You give me a thank you gift, right? Or just you did a great business deal, so you have lots of extra money, so you give me a present of not just 100 I gave you, but 110. So since we didn't determine that there was a requirement to pay me more than I gave you at the time I made the loan, so it's not ketzutza, rather it's just avak ribis, and that's an iser derabanan. Okay, now, so anytime you're paying someone with any goods or services or money in addition to what you borrowed, if you stipulated that payment ahead of time, it's ketzutza and d'oraisa. If you didn't stipulate it, but you give it anyways, you're an avak ribis and derabanan. Now, the rabbis said, listen, when you do something like a forward contract, when you do a deal where I commit in a commercial transaction, where I say, listen, give me the $100 today, and I'll deliver you the stuff next week, okay? So that really makes the opportunity for someone which is essentially economically the same as charging interest, because if I have to, you give me $100 today, and right now, today, you know, I'm telling you, listen, I'll deliver you a bottle of wine, and then the price of wine goes up. When I have to deliver the wine to you, since the wine appreciated and it's costing more than $100, so now I'm losing. Okay, so that's effectively like ribis. So the rabbis forbade that. They forbade what I'll call forward contracts, agreements to pay now and then deliver later, which in the Gemara's language is psika al haperos. It's a psika, like they fix a price or future payment on some kind of commodity, some kind of merchandise. And the rabbi says you may not do that because essentially a person can get harmed the same kind of way a loan is, because effectively by the buyer giving over the $100 now is exactly analogous to a lender giving $100 now. And then there's a payment in the future. So if the payment is going to be, instead of cash, it's going to be stuff, delivery of the wine, but the wine is worth more in the future, so then the borrower, the person who sold it, in other words, has to give back not just 100, but 100 plus in terms of value because the wine went up in price. And that sure feels like something very similar to ribbis. And therefore, the rabbi said, you can't do that. You may not do those kind of transactions. Unless, now this is a very important unless, commercial transactions, which involved commitments to take money now and pay later, are forbidden unless they meet one of two criteria. This one, one or the other. The first is what's called yeshlo. That means he has it. He has it. That means that the seller is taking money now, but he has in stock the stuff that he's selling. So in other words, I'm taking $100 now. I'm agreeing to deliver the wine next week, but I have the wine, or I have wine in my wine cellar right now. Okay. Then the rabbi said that's permitted. Why? The thought is that essentially I could say, listen, okay, so the wine that you're buying that I'm delivering in a week, it's now the stuff that I have in my wine cellar. I'm now transferring it ownership to you now. So I'm not exposed to any gain or loss. I don't have to let you take possession now, but I could. We could give it to you now. And the fact that I have it in stock, and therefore I can sort of be fully hedged, meaning if the price of wine goes up 1,000 times, it doesn't make a difference because I have the wine right now in my wine cellar. I won't lose the money. So the rabbi said that's permitted. That's called yeshlo. Okay. The other possibility, what the rabbi said it's permitted, is when it's called yatsa shar. If the price has gone out, meaning that there's a well-known, established, stable market price for this commodity, where everyone knows it, and you could really acquire it for that amount right now if you wanted to. So in other words, everyone knows that, in my example, the wine is available, wine's available in all the shops, the price is $100 for the bottle. So that's called Yatsa Shar. It's a stable price, everyone knows it, it's available, it's a real price. And if I wanted to, when you give me $100 to buy the wine for delivery on Tuesday, next week I should say, whatever it is, so I could easily just go, if I wanted to, right now, and go to any store and buy that commodity, that wine, and have it in stock. And since we said, yeshlo, if you have it in stock, it's like as if you already, you know, transfer ownership now in your hedge, you know, exposed, and it's okay. So too, it's like two steps of, like, you know, theoretical, but theoretically, if there is a fixed market price that everyone knows and recognizes, and I'm getting $100 from you right now, if I want to, I could go to any store and buy it, and then I could have it in stock, and then I could transfer it to you if I wanted to. So therefore, the rabbi said, this person, again, could do that, and therefore he's not so exposed, and it's permitted. Okay, that's called Yatsa Shar. But if you have neither Yeshlo, he doesn't have in stock, or Yatsa Shar, there's a well-known, established, firm, stable market price for this commodity that's being sold, then it's forbidden, midirabanan, to take money now in exchange for payment later, psika ala peros. Okay? Now, one other thing I want to say now before I go further, which is there's a separate dirabanan, it's kind of related, it's called sa'a b'sa'a. I'll translate that very loosely now, it's like a bushel for a bushel, or it could be a cup for a cup or a gallon for a gallon, doesn't matter, a sa'a is a particular measure, but it doesn't make a difference. The point is, I can't say, listen, let me borrow from you, you know, a barrel of a beer now, and I'll give you a new barrel next week. That's forbidden midirabanan. Why? Because I'm essentially not borrowing money from you, but I'm borrowing beer from you, and I'm committing to give you back that same amount of beer. But next week, the price of beer could go up, in which case, when I give you back the beer, you're getting more than, in terms of value, you're getting more than you gave me. So it's kind of like ribbis. It feels like ribbis, okay? So I'm not committing to give you more beer, but it could end up being I'll give you more value. That's also forbidden, midirabanan, because the borrower could sort of also be totally crushed if you know, if beer prices go up, and the lender could make money. So therefore, the rabbi said, you can't do that. Again, sa'a b'sa'a, giving a fixed amount of something in exchange for a fixed amount later, is permitted in the event, says the rabbis, if you have yeshlo, if the borrower has extra in his you know, already in storage somewhere, so it's as if he can give it now, so to speak, if he wants to, or if yatsa shar, or if there's a fixed price now in the marketplace, because then essentially, if he wants to, he could take the what's he's taking now, convert it into money, and buy that new beer, and then deliver it. So he could hedge himself if he wants to. So even if he doesn't, it doesn't matter. And since all these things, commercial transactions or sa'a b'sa'a, once it's permitted, even if the price does go up, so in other words, I borrowed from you I took money from you for $100. I said, I'll deliver you the wine next week. Because either yesh lo or yatsa shar. If, in fact, next week when I deliver the wine, the price of wine is doubled and you're making a killing, so to speak, that's still permitted for me to give you the wine because the transaction was permitted at the time that it happened. Okay, that's the background here in a nutshell. Now let's go to the first Mishnah and we'll see this inside. So says the Mishnah, Ezehu neshech ve'ezehu tarbis. What constitutes neshech and what constitutes tarbis, ribis? Now this is confusing. I just got finished telling you that in the psukim and the chumash, neshech and ribis are interchangeable to both Yisurei Doraisa. But in the Mishnah, we're going to refer to neshech as the Doraisa version of prohibition, and the tarbis as being something which is aser midorabanan. Okay? That's just how it is. So we're going to go through that right now. Ezu neshech, what constitutes neshech, meaning iser do'oraisa? So again, that'll be katsutsa, where you're lending either 1A will be neshech, where you're lending money and asking for more than you gave, or 1B will be you're lending stuff, like apples, and asking for more apples than you gave. Okay, so the Mishnah is inside. Hamal vesela b'chamisha dinarin. If either A, 1A, a person lends a sela of money, a sela is the equivalent of 4 dinar. So he says, I'll give you 4 dinar today, b'chamisha dinarim, but you have to give me 5 dinarim next week. So there's an interest payment of an extra dinar. So that's good old-fashioned katsutza, fixed ribis ashrimidoraisa. Or 1B is sa'asayim chitin, I'll give you 2 bushels of wheat today, b'shalosh, but next week you have to give me back 3 bushels of wheat. Again, we're katsutza, we're in a situation where we're establishing at the time of the loan, you have to give me more than I gave you, and that being the case, those are iser d'oraisa of lending an interest, what's called neshech right now. And why is it called neshech? What does the word neshech mean? Mipnei shehu noshech, because it bites, meaning the borrower of the money or of the wheat is going to feel the pain of the bite because he's actually going to be net-net even poorer come a week when he has to give back the money or the wheat because he has less than when he started even before. He's deeper in the hole. Now, there is a question why the Mishnah used the strange expression of sela b'chamisha dinar, and why doesn't it say like you borrow 2 dinar and you require 3 back? Why do you do this sela and 5 business? The answer is you might have thought incorrectly that a sela is considered like a commodity, since salam is one kind of coin and dinar are a different kind of coin, and it's theoretically possible, although normally there are 4 dinar and a sela, that the exchange of them could fluctuate. That'll be a durabanan, but the answer is no. It's a doraisa, because since they're both silver coins, they're considered totally interchangeable. Meaning, in contrast, if we talk about gold coins, so we got finished in the previous perek talking about how gold, if you're selling gold for silver, someone's buying gold coins, so the gold is considered to be the peros, the commodity. It's like a commercial transaction, like as if it's like a commodity. So there, although the normal exchange is 25 silver coins for a gold coin, if one would say, I'll give you a gold coin today, but for 26 silver coins in the future, that'll be a durabanan, not a doraisa, because gold to silver is considered like a commodity, it's considered like psikala peros, that's considered to be a commercial transaction, not a loan, and therefore it's only Mr. Durabun. That's why we went on to the Sela story. Okay, that's part one, that's really simple. Now, part two, which is less simple. The Ezu Tarbis, what constitutes ribis, and this is a Durabun. Okay, so it's called Tarbis, because it means marbe beperos, that the person is increasing the amount of merchandise he has, meaning he's doing a commercial transaction, walking away richer, but it's not a loan. It's not structured as a loan, I'll give you and you give me back. It's structured as a commercial transaction. I'm selling you something, you're going to buy something, and I'm going to deliver something in exchange for the money you're giving me for that purchase. Okay? So that's Durabanan. Now, here we go. So it says, Ketzad, what's the Isser Durabanan of Marbis? Lakach heimenu chitin bedinar zahav hakur. The seller takes 1 golden dinar, which is the equivalent of 25 silver dinarim, in exchange for a kur of chitin. Again, I'll call it a bushel. Doesn't matter. A kur is 30 sa. It doesn't make a difference. A bushel of chitin. Bushel of wheat. Okay? V'chein hashar. And that is the prevailing market price. Everyone knows how much does a kur of wheat cost. Everyone, every shopkeeper, everyone selling wheat in every store up and down the shuk tells you, yeah, the price is a dinar zav. It's 25 silver coins or 1 gold coin. Okay? So Since that's the case, and there's Yatza Shahar, this transaction is actually permitted, even with the Rabbanan, for me to take 25 silver coins, one gold coin today, and say I'll deliver you the wheat next week, is yes, permitted, because Yatza Shahar, because it's a fixed price. And if I want to, I could take your money now, go buy the wheat from any merchant, then I could have it in my basement, I'm hedged, I'm not exposed, and I could deliver the wheat to you next week, and it's as if I gave it to the wheat right now, just you didn't take possession until next week. So since that's at least theoretically possible, it's permitted. Okay, so far nothing has been wrong, even with the Rabbanan. But then, Amdu Chitim B'Shloshim Dinarim, next week rolls around, the price of wheat has gone up, and instead of being 25 silver coins, one gold coin, it's now more. Now it's 30 silver coins, so it costs more to buy wheat, the wheat has gone up, and when I deliver you your wheat now that you paid me for last week, you'll actually be richer than before, because you could get 30 silver coins, even though you only paid 25. But that too would be permitted. That's called commerce. That's called doing business. And that's everything's going to be A-okay. But that's not what happens in our Mishnah. Amarlo, ten li chitai. You say, listen, I bought the wheat last week. I want my wheat now. What I want it? She'ani rotel lemachron velikach ben yain. The price of wheat's gone up. I can sell that wheat now for 30, katari profit, and use it to buy a keg of wine. The price of wine, a keg of wine, is 30 dinar. So this is great. I can get exchanged. You know, I can make a big profit. Instead of I laid out 25 last week, and that would not buy me a keg of wine. But now, you owe me wheat, and if you give me the wheat, I could sell that for 30 and get wine instead. And if, indeed, I would say, okay, fine, here's your wheat, and it's appreciated, I'm happy for you, or whatever, I'm not happy for you, that makes a difference, that's totally permitted. Okay, but that's not what the salesman does. Amarlo, the salesman says, no, I'm not delivering your wheat. Let's just do it as a book entry. Let's just say, like, let's put it in the math. I'll do the math, the equivalent. I'll give you credit as if I gave you back the wheat and then we sold it, meaning I'm changing how much I owe you. I don't owe you any more one bushel of wheat, a kur of wheat. Instead, I owe you 30 dinar. You gave me 25, but now I'm agreeing to pay you back 30. Now, even that would be acceptable, okay? Because the price of wheat is now 30, so it's the exact same thing. But and then I say, now I'm not going to give you. You want the money now because you want to close and purchase some wine. But I say, listen, harei lacha etzlei behen yain. I'll do the whole trade for you as like a book entry. I'll say, listen, no longer do I owe you a bushel, a kur of wheat. Now I owe you a barrel of wine, okay? And it's the exact same, because at this very minute in the marketplace, you can exchange a kur of wheat for a barrel of wine. So I say, listen, I'll just, instead of giving you wheat, I'll give you wine next time. Now that is aser midirabanan, assuming the yayin ainlo, assuming that the merchant who took the money originally, that was owing the wheat, does not have the wine in his possession already. Because why? Because what is he doing? He's saying, I'll promise to give you wine in the future, but remember, the way that the Yeshlo worked was that the Yatzar Shahar worked, is that he, if he wants to, could fully hedge himself. He could buy the product now and just deliver it in a week. But if he only has a liability, an IOU to the guy, I promise to pay you back 30 now, but he hasn't got the cash in hand, so he couldn't buy the wine if he wanted to, okay? And he doesn't have any in stock. So therefore, it's not a situation of, even if there's not a situation of Yeshlo, even if there is Yatzar Shahar, even if the price of wine is well known, but a person can't buy wine with a promise, okay? Since he can't get the wine, to promise he'll give the wine in the future, where now he's exposed, and if the price of wine goes up, he really can get killed, right? He can suffer a big loss, and the guy who bought the wheat earlier on, like call him now, like the can essentially make a lot of money potentially. As like, so to speak, like the lender, like the, as if you were a lender because he gave the money last week, 25 last week. So that would be aser midirabanan. It's aser midirabanan because there's no yeshlo and there's no yatzar shahar that's relevant, because yatzar shahar doesn't help if you can't now actually go and buy the wheat and you can't buy the wine. You can't buy the wine now because he doesn't have it in hand. Okay, and that's the dindirabanan. Now the Mishnah sure makes me very complicated. It could have made a much simpler case. It could have just simply said a case. Reuven owes Shimon money, and Shimon says, give my money back, because I want to buy wine with it, and Reuven says, okay, I'll just owe you the wine instead of the money. That's also the same Isser Durabanan. It's a promise to deliver wine later in exchange for a debt now, and there's no Yeshlo, and then no Yatzashah that matters because you only have a debt, no cash. So therefore, it's the same exact thing. The Mishnah did this two-step process of two, like what's Psikal Aperas, two promises. First, deliver wheat, and then later on to say, I'll deliver wine instead, to show you that even if the debt arose in a non-halva, a non-loan way, because really Midoraisa, it's only the loans that are Aser Midoraisa V'Neshach, but since it doesn't matter, even if the debt started out being a commercial transaction, which was totally the kosher and legitimate, you can't now convert that loan into a promise of future payments, future delivery, that'd be Aser, at least Aser Midorabanan.